Welcome to episode 3 of Artful Albany, Illuminated and Open Gallery. The Capitol Walls podcast is brought to you by Albany Center Gallery, Discover Albany, and the Downtown Albany Business Improvement District. The podcast is a guided walking tour intended to celebrate the art, history, and culture that is unique to New York's capital city. During each episode, we will focus on a section of downtown Albany. We will regale you with historic stories, highlight dynamic public art, and hear from some of the artists behind the Capitol walls. We won't have time to stop at every mural, but you're encouraged to pause the podcast or make time on your own to experience the Capitol walls for yourself. While it isn't necessary to listen to the podcast in order, we may make reference to certain historical events or figures who appear in previous episodes. Episode 3 will begin at the entrance of Hudson and Green Street by the entrance of the Green Hudson Garage across the street from Sylvie Kantorowicz's mural, Back Home. We will walk along Norton Street to State Street. We hope you wear comfy shoes because we'll then be traveling up State Street Hill until we reach Lodge Street. After a left on Lodge, we'll continue up Howard to Eagle Street and end in front of the Renaissance Hotel. Feel free to pause the podcast at any time to give yourself enough time to reach each spot. Stand on the far sidewalk facing the entrance of the Hudson Green Garage. In episode 2, we ended our tour in front of Sylvie Kantorowicz's mural, Back Home. We will continue our walk with Kara Hanley's mural, Illuminated. But before we hear from Kara, take a moment and look across from Back Home to the doors behind Illuminated. You will see one set of doors wrapped in a vinyl print of a painting. This is Jay Schellenkamp's All Loose Things. This artwork is part of the outdoor public placemaking exhibit Open Gallery. You may remember Open Gallery from episode 2, where we found examples lining Liberty Park. Sponsored by the Downtown Bid and Albany Center Gallery, Open Gallery is a public art project that activates downtown side streets and alleyways into vibrant, colorful outdoor galleries. Inspired by Louisville, Kentucky's highly successful Alley Gallery program, Open Gallery creatively reframes underutilized and overlooked spaces through the use of artwork. We will see 2 more examples of Open Gallery in this episode, but there are 14 doors in total throughout downtown. You can download a walking tour at www.downtownalbany.org/opengallery. Now, take a few steps to your right until you're facing the mural of Albany skyline bathed in moonlight. This is Kara Hanley's Illuminated. Listen as Kara guides us through her creative process.
Hi guys, my name is Kara Hanley. I'm an artist living here in Albany. As you proceed to my mural here named Illuminated, I'd love to share a bit with you about my process and inspiration behind the piece, as well as what it's like to participate in a mural program in Albany. So to get started, I'd like to talk a little bit about the inspiration behind my mural. This mural was created over 3 years ago now, which I was surprised when I looked back at the date this morning. So it was also a kind of a different time in my life and my artist career. So this is a really interesting experience to reflect on that. So at the time, I was staying up really late at night after work most nights. And painting away, staying up too late, I think, drinking lots of coffee. And it was kind of, I remember it as being a pretty magical time in my artist career, where I was just starting to market and sell my art. I'd done some artwork of Albany and people really liked that. And this was my first large scale project that I took on. But leading up to that point, it was a lot of watercolor and gouache painting in my apartment at night. A lot of inspiration from Albany, the city itself. There was something about nighttime specifically that I wanted to reflect in the mural. So there's something about nighttime to me that is very, of course, mysterious, but it also encourages exploration and creativity, I think. It's a quieter time, a time of introspection. So I was doing a lot of artwork at that time in my apartment, listening to music by the window in my bedroom and being inspired by the city lights and the architecture of Albany. So when I was invited to do this piece in collaboration with the Albany Barn and Albany Center Gallery and the Parking Authority, I knew I wanted to create a piece that was going to pay homage to the city. It was pretty surreal thinking about how this piece was going to be a part of the city, really, for years. So I wanted to kind of give a gift back to the city that had given me the gift of so much inspiration throughout my life, having grown up here. The architecture here is just incredible, how you can walk down a street and see architecture inspired by different countries and different time frames. One building next to another could be completely different. So that's kind of what led me to want to create this scene and of the window in the Albany cityscape. So when we were planning the mural out, I was working closely with Tony from Albany Center Gallery. We were shooting back and forth ideas, thumbnail sketches. He would give me feedback, and that was really helpful. So there's obviously pros and cons to either working independently or working in collaboration with others. When you work in collaboration with others, it just opens up the doors to things that you don't see when you're so zeroed in on your own work and kind of working in your own head. So my original sketch for this piece had been actually a woman in front of the window, holding the book open with the cityscape coming out of it. And through discussion with Tony, we decided to go this different route because we really wanted it to be inclusive of anybody viewing the mural. So just by taking the person out of the composition, you're able to kind of change the psychological position of the viewer. So not the physical location, you're still looking at the piece, but instead it could be seen as you holding open the book with the cityscape of Albany coming out in this kind of dreamscape. So that's something that I don't think I would have come to on my own if I hadn't been working with Tony and working in collaboration with these other agencies that were in support of the piece. Also at the time, I was actually on an artist residency in Italy, which was an amazing experience. But I was planning this mural remotely with Tony by email while I was there. And I was actually experiencing a lot of homesickness for Albany. And, you know, I was traveling and I was experiencing all of these great things, but I still felt this pull towards home. So I think that experience kind of helped create some of the magic and the warmth of the piece as well. Creating a mural is way different than painting a watercolor illustration or a gouache illustration on paper in my home. The scale is obviously much, much, much bigger. The materials are different. The paint that I used was more like an acrylic paint. So when you work with watercolor, gouache, or any kind of water-based medium, it's forgiving in some ways in that you can work the color after it's been laid down by reactivating it with water. You can layer it to create kind of depths of color. When you work with a paint like acrylic, when it's on, it's on, and there's not much you can do about it. So it's commitment. I guess you can always go over it, but it's a much different process. So I was scared. But thankfully Tony and Albany Center Gallery, they were super encouraging. And I'm very glad that I pushed myself to participate in this project, as challenging as it was for me artistically. Also the surface of the wall, if you go and look at the wall close up, you'll see that it's kind of porous cement. So when you're painting with a bristled paintbrush, you have to make sure you're getting in all the holes and crevices of the wall, which is really quite a time-consuming process. So you have both the materials and the wall that create challenges, and then you're also working in the elements. So you're outside, you're working with your full body, your full range of motion, you're up on ladders, you're down on the ground, you're crouching, you're encountering people who are walking by, who are curious about the artwork. So in that way, you're really like, it's a full body experience in creating the artwork. And you're also feeling very connected to the community, not just in that you're painting on an actual surface in your city, but you're engaging with people that you may have otherwise not met about the artwork and about the program and what the city is doing to bring art and creativity downtown. So that was, you know, that was, it was challenging, but of course with challenge comes growth. So when I was done with the piece, I was very happy with how it came out. And, you know, I feel like it really reflects the inspiration that our city can give to us. I'm really grateful for the opportunity that I had to literally leave a mark on the city, and to kind of say thank you to the city that helped develop my creativity and, from which I received so much inspiration throughout my adolescence and up through my adulthood to now. I continue to be inspired by the city. So this painting for me was not only a great artistic endeavor, but it was also a kind of a way of showing gratitude to our city.
Thank you, Kara. To learn more about Kara's work, please visit her website at www.karahanley.com. As we travel along Green Street toward State Street, we'll discuss some of the buildings long lost, but their historic stories are timeless. To begin, turn right from Illuminated and walk a few paces down Green Street to the open-air parking lot next door to the garage. The Gaiety Theater once stood where this parking lot is today. In 1861, newly elected President Abraham Lincoln journeyed to his inauguration by train from Springfield, Illinois to Washington, D.C. Along the way, he made stops to give speeches at major cities. On February 18th, he stopped in Albany. It just so happens that on the day of Lincoln's visit, the actor turned assassin John Wilkes Booth was preparing to resume his performances at the Gaiety Theater. Less than a week earlier, ironically on Lincoln's birthday, Booth had a mishap with his prop dagger during a performance of The Apostate. The dagger had pierced through his coat's pocket, narrowly missing his heart. Booth nearly bled to death on the Gaiety stage. Booth was cleared to return to the stage the same day as Lincoln's visit to Albany. The citizens of Albany gathered excitedly downtown. Whether they voted for Lincoln or not, this would likely be the only time they could see the President of the United States in person. Thousands lined historic State Street, just a block away from where you're standing today. It was a moment not to be missed. Historians look to this fortuitous incident in history as the moment that Booth likely resentfully joined the revelry and first laid eyes on the man he would come to assassinate 4 years later. Can you imagine John Wilkes Booth, his arm in a sling, sore from recovery, standing in a crowd just a block away from the theater he was set to perform in? You can learn more about Lincoln's visit to Albany by booking a walking tour with the Historic Albany Foundation. Visit them at www.historic-albany.org to find out more about their themed historic tours. Continue walking down Green Street and pause for just a moment to look down Norton Street. You'll be looking down a street that looks like a tunnel. Can you spot our next open gallery piece, To Keith Walters, A Place to Reflect? It's to the right of the tunnel entrance. At the far end of Norton Street once stood the law office of the infamous former vice president, Aaron Burr. Thanks to the hit musical Hamilton, there's been renewed interest in Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr's contentious relationship. But what you don't learn from the musical is that their paths often intersected here in Albany. Both Burr and Hamilton had family, political, and professional ties to the area. But most notably, an important incident occurred at the building that once stood on the corner of State and Green Street that would alter the course of American history itself. Continue to walk along Green and stop at the corner of State Street as I tell you the story. The building that once stood on this corner of State and Green was the home of Judge John Taylor. Taylor had hosted a dinner party in his home that was attended by Alexander Hamilton, Hamilton's father-in-law, General Philip Schuyler, and Taylor's son-in-law, Charles D. Cooper. Cooper later composed a letter detailing the evening, claiming Hamilton called Burr a dangerous man and ought not to be trusted. A local Albany newspaper, the Albany Register, obtained a copy of the letter and published it on April 25th, 1804. Burr already had an axe to grind with Hamilton, as Hamilton was a key player in a letter-writing campaign to keep Burr from ascending to the presidency. This latest piece of published gossip only furthered Burr's resentment, and he demanded Hamilton retract his statement. Hamilton was already dealing with social fallout due to his public affair with Maria Reynolds and likely couldn't risk being seen as both a lecher and a liar. Hamilton would neither confirm nor deny that he made the statement, and he refused to retract. Enraged, Aaron Burr challenged Alexander Hamilton to a duel. On July 11th, 1804, Aaron Burr killed Alexander Hamilton in Weehawken, New Jersey. All because Hamilton was likely caught gossiping at a dinner party in Albany, New York. Isn't it amazing how much influential history occurred on one little street in Albany? As you stand on the corner of State and Green, look directly to your right. You will see the awning for Jack's Oyster House. The venerable Jack's opened in 1913 and boasts the title of Albany's oldest family-run restaurant. Originally located on Beaver and Green Street and run by family patriarch Jack Rosenstein, the restaurant moved to its current location on 42 State Street in 1937. The current building dates to 1875. Jack's Oyster House has witnessed the evolution of State Street for more than a generation, including its resilience in weathering the Great Depression. Jack's remained a steadfast fixture, and its history was commemorated in an honorary renaming of State Street in 2013 as Jack's Oyster House Way. Before we resume walking, look up State Street. State Street is one of the oldest streets in Albany. It's included in our original colonial footprint, which makes it one of the oldest streets in the United States. It's also one of the widest streets in New York State. The expansive width has caught the attention of Hollywood, And in 2009, the comedy film The Other Guys transformed downtown Albany into downtown Manhattan. State Street was closed off for high-speed car chases and stunt work. This isn't Albany's only brush with fame. Ironweed, starring Jack Nicholson and Meryl Streep, was filmed here. Salt, starring Angelina Jolie, Marvel's The Punisher, and so many more. You can learn about the film shot in Albany by visiting www.albany.org/film-Albany. Begin walking up State Street until you reach 60 State Street on your left. It's hard to miss. It's the building just ahead with Greek columns. Today, State Street is lined with multiple former 19th and 20th century banks. Today, you'll see many of these banks have been repurposed for local businesses, co-working spaces, office space, as well as event and wedding venues. In fact, if you take the same walk any summertime weekend evening, you're likely to see wedding parties and their photographers lined from the Capitol building all the way down to Jack's, taking advantage of the beautiful city backdrop. Look across the street from 60 State Street, and you'll see what looks like a little castle on the corner of State and James Street. This building is a favorite of many locals and visitors, but few know its purpose. It's the former Mechanics and Farmers Building, another former bank that has been transformed into rentable office space. It was built in the mid-1870s and designed by Russell Sturgis. If you have time, it's worth walking the exterior of the building on your own. Original details such as intricate carvings and the original night deposit box still remain. Continue walking up State Street a few more paces until you reach the modern WellCare building on your left. It's next door to the Fairfield Inn. Take a moment to stop at the eye-level windows at the WellCare building displaying the largest Sign of Greatness historic panel. If you remember from our last episode, the Signs of Greatness are 12 historic interpretive signs that highlight unique points of interest in downtown Albany. Feel free to pause the podcast to read the sign in detail. Otherwise, continue to walk up State Street, but stop when you see the steps on your left for the WellCare building in front of M&T Bank. When you reach your destination, look across the street at the massive reddish building that takes up the whole corner of State and Pearl Street. This is 69 State Street. You are looking at the oldest original commercial facade in downtown Albany. It was originally another bank, the former New York State Bank. The original building was designed by Albany architect Philip Hooker. You saw his work back in episode 1 when we visited First Church on Pearl Street. The original Philip Hooker structure was opened in 1803 and stood 35 feet from the corner of James Street, opposite the Mechanics and Farmers Building. In the 1920s, it became necessary to expand the building. Most of the original structure was destroyed, save the face. The facade of Hooker's original structure was preserved and moved to the current location you see before you. It was then incorporated into the updated 16-story redesign. If you venture inside the building, you will see beautiful murals by David C. Lithgow, which colorfully illustrate Albany's rich history. Keep walking up State Street and cross Pearl Street. Once you've crossed the street, continue to trek up the hill until you're standing in front of the arched entrance of 90 State Street. It'll be on your left. Mind the traffic. You may need to pause the podcast until you've reached your destination. You are standing in front of a former, yep, you guessed it, bank. This was the National Savings Bank. It first opened in 1930 and was the first in the city to have automatic signal control elevators. Inside is a beautiful marble interior with Corinthian pillars. 90 State Street is another building on State Street that has been repurposed as an elegant event space and wedding venue. Look to the left of the entrance of 90 State Street, and you'll notice a modest plaque. At one point in time, the former law office of Martin Van Buren stood at this very spot. Van Buren was New York's ninth governor, one of the founders of the Democratic Party, and is one of the four New York State governors who moved on to the presidency. The others were Grover Cleveland, Teddy Roosevelt, and his cousin, Franklin Roosevelt. Keep walking up State Street until you reach the corner of State and Lodge Street. As you walk, notice the building to the right of 90 State Street. This is the former Albany City Savings Institution. Most notably, when it was originally opened in 1902, it was Albany's first skyscraper. It was later expanded upon in 1924 to include the beautiful gleaming clock tower. The architect is Marcus T. Reynolds. Remember him? We discussed Reynolds in episode 2. He's the architect behind SUNY Plaza, the old D&H building, which is the giant castle-like structure at the foot of State Street. As you continue to ascend State Street, look to the church across the street on your right. This is St. Peter's Episcopal Church. The original St. Peter's was established in the middle of State Street in 1708 to accommodate the growing number of British soldiers settling in colonial Albany. The church was replaced and relocated across the street in 1802. Philip Hooker designed the second structure, but it was replaced in 1860 by New York City architect Richard Upton. You may be familiar with his work if you've seen Trinity Church in Manhattan. St. Peter's Church is the final resting place of General Lord Howe. Lord Howe was a general in the British Army who perished at Fort Ticonderoga during a battle in the French and Indian War in 1757. He was well respected by locals, and it would have been difficult to transport his remains back to his homeland in England. It was felt it was appropriate to inter his remains in the English church. His burial marker is the only marker for a British peer in the United States. The tower was added to the church in 1876 and was designed by Upton's son. Look to the top of the tower and you will see three gargoyles looming overhead. These gargoyles weigh 3 tons each and they are proper gargoyles. What do I mean by that? Well, if you want to get technical, gargoyles typically act as exterior waterspouts, spitting rainwater away from buildings. Grotesques are decorative monsters on the exterior and interior of the buildings. Both creatures are said to have the responsibility of warding evil spirits from the building. Walk left down Lodge Street, and you'll begin to approach the City Beer Hall. The City Beer Hall building was opened in 1903 and was originally operated as the former headquarters for the Home Telephone Company. The building was designed by architect Charles Ogden, whose name may ring a bell to those longtime locals. Before it was City Beer Hall, this building was Ogden's Restaurant, a once popular haunt for politicos and lobbyists. Just a little further to go, begin walking up Howard Street. Look ahead and you'll see an enclosed pedestrian walkway connecting the Albany Capitol Center with the Renaissance Hotel. Once you've passed under the walkway, you're going to briefly stop by a set of doors to your right on the Renaissance Hotel. This will be our last example of open gallery. Just like Capitol walls, the open gallery is an ever-evolving initiative. We're going to say it again. If you know a local wall that would be a perfect spot for public art for both Capitol walls or open gallery, let Albany Center Gallery know. They are continuously looking for a diverse range of talented and passionate artists for public art. You should be standing by the two doors on the Renaissance Hotel. The piece you will see here is Tom Rowland's Rec Grid No. 4. If you're not there yet, pause the podcast until you reach your destination. Did you find Rec Grid No. 4? Once you have, walk just a few more steps until you reach the corner of Howard and Eagle Street. When you reach the corner, look to the large building on your left. This is the Albany Capitol Center. Capitol Center is downtown Albany's convention center. Not only has the Capitol Center hosted traditional conventions, but it's also equipped to handle basketball games, weddings, and even roller derby. The Capitol Center opened in 2017, and in its first 2 years open to the public, it welcomed over 290,000 visitors. Inside the Capitol Center are beautiful murals created by artist Dahl Taylor. Some listeners may know Dahl Taylor for providing the illustrations for Addie for the American Girl book series. The mural celebrates Albany through images of history, culture, commerce, and nature. The mural also pairs with an interactive website. If the Capitol Center is not open, you can view the mural at www.albanycapitolcenter.com/mural. We have one last stop. Turn right along Eagle Street and stop when you reach the corner of Eagle and State Street. You are walking alongside the Renaissance Hotel. The Renaissance is located in the former DeWitt Clinton Hotel. The DeWitt Clinton was operational from 1927 to 1975 and welcomed personalities such as Elizabeth Taylor and John F. Kennedy. Governor Al Smith is said to be the first person to check into the original DeWitt Clinton. On opening day, he proudly marched into the hotel lobby and signed his name in the brand new guest book. But he never stayed the night. So who is the official first guest in the DeWitt Clinton Hotel? Well, not long after Smith left, a formally attired cat strode confidently into the hotel. Literally, it was a tomcat with a black and white fur coat. The hotel staff was happy to accommodate their new guest. They named him DeWitt Clinton Jr. and set up a lovely down pillow for him on the fourth floor. Unfortunately, the hotel needed to give up little DC's space to paying customers. They tried to entice him with new accommodations featuring a charming basket in the lobby. But this would not do. DeWitt Clinton Jr. vanished into the night. On your own time, it's worth walking into the lobby of the Renaissance Hotel. When Joe Nicola and the Marriott Corporation first began restoration of the former DeWitt Clinton, they uncovered elaborate murals by Irish artist Victor Gerald White. Each panel depicts a moment in Albany history. The murals were in desperate need of restoration. At great expense, Nicola hired the Williamstown Art Conservation Center to restore the murals to their former glory. To your left is the incredible New York State Capitol Building. We'll pick up with the Capitol Building in our next episode. To wrap up, we'll talk about an event that used to take place on the Capitol lawn, long before its construction. Before this was known as Capitol Hill, the top of State Street was known as Pinkster Hill. In the 1700s, Pinkster was a festival celebrated in parts of New York and New Jersey. Originally, Pinksteren, later shortened Pinkster, is the Dutch word for Pentecost. Pentecost is one of the major feast days for Christians. The Dutch would commemorate it by attending church and completing rites like baptism and confirmations. They would also allow those they enslaved time off, an incredibly rare gesture. Many of the people who were enslaved in our region came from the Kingdom of Congo and had already been introduced to Christianity by the Portuguese in the late 14th century. If they were not already Christian before coming to America, they would have been aware of Christianity and Christian rites. Like many Christian cultures across the globe, Congolese Christian rites appear as a blend between pagan and traditional practices of that region. Drums, dancing, and singing were ways of praising the divine. Pinkster was an opportunity to celebrate Pentecost with their own traditions. Albany's Pinkster occurred here, on what we now call Capitol Hill. Pinkster in Albany was most popular between the 1790s and 1810. Enslaved people would travel for miles to partake in celebrations, often reuniting with friends and loved ones who were sold against their will. It was a highly creative festival. Local food like oysters and small game were sold and shared, and dances that blended African and European roots were enjoyed by all. Both citizens of European and African descent set up shops, which were decorated with flowers, the azalea being the flower most associated with Pinkster. As many as 1,000 people gathered at the Crown of State Street to celebrate Pinkster. Pinkster is now considered a distinctly African-American tradition. Each Pinkster, King Charles, or Charlie, presided over the proceedings. Charles was from Angola. He would dress in a lavish gold-trimmed crimson cape and tri-corner hat and led the parade up State Street Hill. Throughout Pinkster, he moved through the crowd, keeping spirits high over the long celebratory days. Some historians also believe that Adam Blake Sr., whose son Adam Blake became one of the most successful entrepreneurs in Albany, was another figure instrumental in maintaining the joy and festivities of Pinkster. But we'll be hearing more about the Blakes in episode 4. What happened to Albany's Pinkster? Well, the official story from the 1811 Albany Common Council is that, due to all the drinking and revelry, Pinkster was getting too rowdy and out of control. Pinkster was outlawed. But historians look back at Pinkster and note that free people of color were attending the festival and conversing with enslaved people. Participants in Pinkster were also taking the opportunity through storytelling, song, and other performance to covertly make fun of their European captors. More than likely, the Albany Common Council was fearful of organized rebellion. Today, there have been smaller Pinkster festivals across the capital region. However, the law banning the African celebration of Pinkster in Albany was not officially repealed by the city until 2011. You can learn more about Pinkster across New York State by visiting www.hudsonvalley.org/article/what-is-Pinkster. Thank you to our open gallery artists and to artist Kara Hanley. Special thank you to New York State Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation's interpreter of African American history, Lavada Nahan, for helping us illuminate Albany's Pinkster history. And thank you for tuning in to episode 3 of Artful Albany, Illuminated and Open Gallery. This podcast was made possible by the generous sponsorship of Discover Albany, the Downtown Albany Bid, and Albany Center Gallery. The Capitol Walls are made possible by Albany Center Gallery, Albany Barn, and Albany Parking Authority. To see a listing of all the Capitol Walls, please visit Albany Center Gallery's website at www.albanycentergallery.org/capitolwalls. Learn more about exciting events in our area by visiting Discover Albany's website, www.albany.org, and the Downtown Bids website at www.downtownalbany.org. We'll see you next time.